Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, welcome to the 302nd episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Daniel Rhodes, Simon L. Smith, John Slater, and Adam Troy. Thanks, everyone. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Oren Kaplan, and today we have Maureen Baruccia back on the podcast. You might remember her as the director that used to direct Jimmy Kimmel Live. A lot of the sketch segments on there. She's also been doing other TV. She just did a Saved by the Bell episode. She did episodes of Drama Club, Crank Yankers, and she just finished a new movie called The Prank, starring Rita Moreno. And she also had a movie almost premiere at South by, I mean, I guess it premiered at South by Southwest last year, Golden Arm, but it was a virtual premiere because of COVID. And so insanity in the world, but it's great to have Maureen back. She's just fun to talk to.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, good pal. It's a great conversation. It's kind of part of maybe our new mandate. Our new kind of direction for the show, which is us going back to our roots of just kind of like calling up our pals and talking to them about what's going on, being a little less preoccupied with whether or not a director we don't know has something to promote or not, basically.
One of our listeners sent us some feedback on Instagram, I believe, and was like, you know, when you have your friends on the podcast, it's a different type of conversation than non-friends. And I like it because we can just really dig into the things that you and I find interesting, and hopefully we act as a proxy for all of you that are listening quarantined in your home with the Omicron.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see. I think we're still going to have plenty of filmmakers on the show that we don't know because that's how we met Maureen. But we're definitely trying to make things a little bit more genial, maybe is the word. So anyway, let us know. Let us know what you think about this episode and further episodes. And, you know, if you want us to just talk to new filmmakers, that's cool too.
Or if you want just Matt and me to do a deep dive on a topic, we're also happy to do that.
Yeah. So yeah, which is probably going to be a little bit of column A, B, and C.
Yeah. Any feedback is great. Mm-hmm. We also lost our editor, Sarah. We've mentioned it many times. If you are interested in editing our podcast, let us know. It's a weekly job. We record every week, and we put out a new episode every week, and you would need to edit and then post the episode and help us, you know, figure out the titles and things like that. There's a little bit of work involved for a small stipend, but it's fun. You get to hear all the raw stuff that Matt and I say, a lot of non-PC stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we, just really
mainly Mac stuff. It's mainly me just talking about Mac things.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I find it all really disgusting. And if we had an HR department, I would have reported Oren long ago. If you are a person who likes the show, wants to contribute a little bit more, is curious about how to make a podcast,
or as a professional podcast editor, you know,
or as a professional podcast editor,
we do not shy away from experienced people if you're okay with the rate.
That is true. But yeah, we have a nice stipend powered by our patrons. If you go to patreon.com/justshootapod, that's where you can throw us a couple bucks to help keep the show going. Literally, if we did not have the money from Patreon, we would not be able to continue making the show because it is going directly from that Patreon account into my LLC and then directly into the pocket of our editors.
A series of tax write-offs.
But yeah. But seriously, you are powering the show. You are keeping it going. And certainly with all of the crazy different jobs in our lives, it's pretty darn hard for us to keep the show going without that support. So thank you all so much. Throw us a buck or two once a month, patreon.com/justshootitpod. And if you throw in 15 bucks, you get yourself a Just Shoot It hat, which, as Oren likes to say, is the coolest thing to wear on set. If you're ever wondering what you should be doing, you can just point to your hat and say, Just Shoot It, crew.
And if you happen to be a super fan of me specifically, Mom, if you're listening, I pack those hats myself. I put them in the package, put the label on them. Sometimes I have my kids draw some stuff on them.
Everyone's wearing an N95.
Everyone's wearing an N96. We just upgraded. And I even, for this last batch of hats, I ran out of packing tape. So I used a lot of Scotch tape. I hope I sent one package to the UK and one package to Canada. So I hope they don't fall apart in transit. If they do, let me know. Speaking of that, I just want to reiterate, it is written on our Patreon, but those hats, we will cover the shipping in the US. If you're international, you'll just have to cover the shipping on top of your patronage. We apologize. We barely break even on those things. So we just have to get some help on the international shipping because it's expensive.
Well, without further ado, let's hop into our conversation with Maureen Barucha.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We are here with Maureen Barucha back on the podcast.
Back on the mic.
Your fifth time? Fourth time?
I just feel like at home here.
Get you like custom headphones.
I want one of those hats you guys always wear.
Yeah. I was thinking
the price would just go up. So we should do a payment plan.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, Maureen, so obviously you've been on the show a lot of times. We talked about Kimmel, we talked about Golden Arm. What have you been up to since we last talked?
A new movie called The Prank, starring Rita Moreno, which is very exciting. Mm-hmm. And Connor Kalapsis, Ramona Young, Keith David, Kate Flannery, John Kimmel are all co-stars. Meredith Salinger. So a really fun group. It's a dark comedy. And it's unlike you've ever seen Rita Moreno. So I don't want to give away too much, but it was such a fun. We shot it this summer in LA and in Oxnard. I'm really proud of it. And I'm really happy with, I think people are going to love it.
That's cool. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got the job? Like, what did you write the script and finance what's the origin story?
So the writers are Becca and Zach White, this really cool couple that wrote this story. And the producer, Stephen Wolf, brought it to me. So it was kind of crazy. Like after, I think we talked about it, but Golden Arm was supposed to premiere at South by 2020. That went down.
Oh, right.
I had an article in The Hollywood Reporter that was kind of about just my experience and kind of being bummed out about that Golden Arm didn't get to premiere. And this producer...
Let's actually, sorry, just to pump the brakes just a tiny bit. I want you to tell the rest of the story, but I think it's okay to say you hired a publicist to kind of get that, you know, just to kind of get your name out there. And obviously we all thought that South By was going to happen. South By was the first festival to get shut down. And so like, but you made the decision like, no, let's keep the ball rolling. You've got some heat. People are excited about this movie. You took, you not just a film, a publicist for the film, but a publicist to tell the story of you as a director.
Yeah.
Because people are always like, well, I want a story in the Hollywood Reporter or whatever.
And they're like, I made a movie. Why doesn't anyone
care? And it's because you kind of have to like hire somebody to explain why someone should care. And ideally something like this happens.
And it, you know what? You're right. It was like a, should I do it? Should I not? It's a lot of money. And, you know, not every time you have a project, it really, you know, calls for a publicist. Mm-hmm. So I have somebody that I love so much, Sam. And she, you know, basically talking to her, she's like, okay, I think this is worth it. So it was like, we thought we were going to South By. When South By didn't happen, it was like, okay, can we still kind of get the word out? And the answer was yes. You know, it was,
I wonder if maybe it is a silver lining for you actually, because I think that's a more interesting pitch than just like another good movie at South by Southwest. Do you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of great movies at South by Southwest, but like,
Maureen Baruta, most disappointed filmmaker.
Honestly, I think you're kind of right. I think that that article it was like an op-ed that she got me, and it was like me being honest. And when I've been in for meetings after that, people have been like, I read your op-ed. Like I really connected with it and you were honest. And I agree. I don't think that I would have gotten that kind of attention. It is a silver lining because, you know, that more people were like, oh yeah.
Is it called an op-ed? I would call them op-eds my entire life.
Op-ed. I don't know. No, I think you're right. I'm probably
what does it stand for? Opinion editorial?
Yeah.
I think I said it wrong.
Op-ed. So you had this article about how disappointed you were about South by Southwest, and it kind of got around town. Were you sending it to people, or it was in the Hollywood Reporter?
It was in the Hollywood Reporter, and I would post it, and I think probably my reps, when they send out, you're kind of like, this is Maureen's info. It was like one of the articles that gets out. And this producer, Stephen Wolf, he basically said he found me by looking at who had movies at South By and who was like interesting. And then he read my op-ed, I don't know how to say it. And then basically we had a friend in common. He produced Valley Girl for Rachel Goldenberg. And so he kind of connected the dots and he knew that we were friends. So he reached out to Rachel to be like, hey, will you connect with me, connect Maureen? And that's kind of how found me.
And was Rachel like, don't you want me to make this movie?
Yeah, I made a movie that kind of could have been noisier if it wasn't for the pandemic too, guys.
I feel like Rachel's probably bigger at that point than the movie. Like, a lower. I mean, Rachel did that huge Studio Valley Girl movie. So I'm sure she was like, this is beneath me. Not beneath me, but you know what I mean.
Do you guys, have you guys ever been asked to recommend a director where you're like, I think I should be that director.
Sometimes, yeah, they're like, "Oh, we're just looking for this like person that does this cool thing," and you're like, "I mean, I could do that."
Yeah,
I think as long as you're right, I think it's totally okay to say that. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes I have been in the position where like you're just kind of like hungry or excited, and it's easy to be like, "Well, yeah, I could do that," but like if you're the person for the movie, I think it's totally fine to be like, hey, you may not know this about me, but here are all the reasons why I'm your person. I'm your director.
Right. Yeah.
That's okay.
Like,
we're
not going to ask Matt for recommendations anymore.
Just pitches himself. I think sometimes when people I think if like they don't know you do something where they're like, I didn't think you'd want to because you only do comedies. And you're like, do genre too, you know? Where it's like, I think that would be appropriate.
Again, I think you still have to have the resume also, But yeah, I think it's worth it to say that to people.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got contacted by this, but Rachel recommended you and you, did he just send you a script or?
Yeah, he sent me the script and I thought it was like so much fun. I'd been reading most stuff I hadn't really liked. And the script that Becca and Zach wrote was just fun and like different. And you know, there was, I pitched on it. There were certain things that I wanted to change. Like, I think originally the two characters were two boys, and I was like, I think we should have one be a girl. Kind of change some of the details.
When he contacts you, does he give you like a budget range or like cat, like any other details?
He didn't actually. Like, what was great, and because the movie is kind of like there's some twists and turns, he was like, I don't want to give you any kind of frame of reference. I just want you to read it and see what you think. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of a cool way just to kind of go in blind to be like, I don't know what this is. And I was like, I love it. I think it's such a great concept and so fun. And immediately, what's so great and unusual is that I've been wanting to work with Rita Moreno forever. And so when I read the script, that was my first person. I was like, I think we should reach out to Rita. And they thought it was such a great idea. So it's like, and rare that the first person that you want says yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. So that's interesting. I had kind of thought that maybe she was already a part of it or anything like that.
That was my pitch. I was like, Rita.
Rita's the person. So let's talk timeline though then, right? Because... Mm-hmm. You know, here we are, it's January 2022. You've been in post for a few months. It sounds like this happened pretty quickly. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it actually, you know what, it really did. It was, they came to me during the pandemic. So it was like kind of exciting. And I think it was October 2020. And that was the first meeting I had. So it did happen very fast again, which is very unusual. But it was like kind of reading it, talking to the executives and kind of pitching my ideas. And then it kind of was like, yeah, let's do this. And they moved very fast. And so I think it was already financed, which is great, and why it could go so fast.
And so you knew that, so they already had a number for the budget when you were pitching on it.
Yeah.
Because I imagine there's a difference between pitching a $100,000 project, a $500,000 project, a $1 million project, a $5 million project, right? Like,
yeah, for
like
sure.
Like the way, like where you shoot or how crazy the stunts are or even what the cast is. Or even
the changes that you're pitching or and the scale of cast too, right? Yeah.
Yes. I think like when I did my like director's rewrite pass, you know, it was like making sure that the location that we picked, we could shoot it in a way. You know what I mean? Like those are the kinds of things that you're changing based on like the budget and the location. And then again, Rita being, she's 90 years old, which is like so wild. You know, what kinds of stunts she could do. Mm-hmm. And so it was a really fun challenge.
During a pandemic as well.
Yes.
When 90-year-olds are probably like, you know, probably shouldn't get COVID.
I mean, knock on wood, we did not have one. We were, you know, such a great set, safe, didn't have one case. So we didn't have an outbreak, which, you know, many, many shoots have had. So that was really, I think that was an accomplishment.
Yeah, truly.
For sure. And so were you pitching against anyone else or was it just kind of like, we want to see what your take on this is. And if we like it, then we'll go with you.
I don't know. I think Steven said that he did, you know, have a couple people on that list, but he said that he was just really intrigued. And we had such a great first meeting. And that's what's so fun is like when you do click with somebody, and I think we've always been on the same creative page, which is really cool. It just really felt like we always wanted to tell the same story. So I think we just clicked creatively.
Did he watch your movie Golden Arm before he reached out to you?
I don't think it was available to watch by then. I think he had seen actually, you know, what's funny is I think he watched one of my like old school, like Lifetime movies that I had done.
So he maybe saw some of your old stuff. He liked you. He liked your article. You pitched on it. He liked you. And then you guys cast the movie. So I guess the thing I'm curious about was it was a DGA shoot, I'm assuming, since you're DGA.
Yeah, DGA, yeah, for sure. It was definitely, which is great. And, you know, that's why I love being in the DGA, is that you can have those protections.
Right. Do you start negotiating your own rate? Like how, like when do you start talking about you? Because you know, you've just finished this other movie. You put all your time and energy into it. You know, it took like a couple of years of your life or however much. And you know, you're probably going to spend another year or two on this next project. Like when do you start talking about what you get out of it, you know, aside from like making it a movie, which obviously is part of the dream, but also you got to get paid.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like with any project I do, you know, obviously like there's like that level of like, one, do I want to do it? So if I really want to do it and I really wanted to do this one, I mean, I don't want to say it doesn't matter what I get paid, but like at some token, you're like, I know how low I'll go. So you're like, okay. And that's also having that conversation with my team, with my managers and agents, and being like, you know, this is what I'm hoping for. What are they paying? You know, if it's way less than like what I'm hoping for, then like maybe that's a more serious conversation. And so like, that's what's great about having a team is like they kind of do, you know, you tell them what you hope for or what you're wanting. And then, you know, they get to, I don't have to do any of that, which is right. So nice.
And I'm curious, Maureen, this is a thing that certainly we've talked about a lot on the show, but it's very pertinent to the way that I feel about my career right now. You know, there are projects that you do for the money, and then there are projects that are the paying gigs, right? And ideally, passion and money, right?
Passion and money.
The dream is that you get paid for the stuff you love, right?
Yeah,
like a Ryan Coogler type of career.
Sure, yes. But there is a difference between Fruitvale Station and mm-hmm. Black Panther, right? And like, certainly he loved making Black Panther. I hope, I assume that's probably pretty likely. And you would expect a paycheck from a Marvel movie. But I guess what I'm getting at is like, you know, you've had a lot of high profile, you know, network TV shows and all sorts of cool stuff that's happened over the years. This last year, you've been on a hot streak, which is wonderful. I think there are jobs that obviously you should be making good money for, right? And there are passion projects that I think lead to those big jobs. And so in my mind, you know, to your point, it's like it kind of doesn't matter that much. Mm-hmm. If your nut is covered, you know, doing an indie film with an icon is kind of worth it career-wise. Would you agree? Or is that just me projecting my hopes and dreams onto you?
I think that is true. I think like that, I mean, I think like in my career, I hope that it is like that balance of like, I mean, one, I hope every project that I'm doing is like that passion project, but you know, it's that balance. So as long as, you know, you're making enough that you feel like you can sustain your life, you are able to take projects that seem, maybe they're not paying as much, but they're giving back in another way, or they're feeding your soul in another way. And so, yeah, I think it is worth it. And again, I think if you feel like it's something that you creatively need to tell or that you can bring a spin on, I'm much more likely to jump on a project like that, even if it isn't paying me as much as maybe something else that's not as creative or just paying by the numbers. Mm-hmm. Cause I've been getting some scripts like that where, you know, I'm like, I'm kind of bummed I didn't get it, but also like not that bummed because mm-hmm. it wasn't something mm-hmm. that I was like so excited about.
Right. I think it's also worth it to say like scale wise, you know, making good money on an indie feature is still comparatively probably pretty darn good money for, you know,
yeah,
I mean?
For sure.
If you could travel back in time 20 years and be like, hey, this is what I made on a movie, you'd be like, oh, well, did you retire? You know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, it also goes back to like a lot of transparency, because I've been talking to a lot of other directors that mm-hmm. are doing indie stuff. And it is like us talking to each other about like what you're making and what I'm making on indie movies, because that isn't as standard as like some of your bigger budget movies. And so it is good to know like what somebody else got on the same, you know, budget level. Cause you're like, hey, mm-hmm. wait, I'm getting less, or like, oh, I could ask for more. You know, mm-hmm, I think mm-hmm. it's good to like have those conversations with your peers.
Yeah. My first indie movie, I got negative $100,000.
But now you have a podcast, Oren.
Yeah.
And so you're negative like 120,000, I'd say, probably at this point.
When I did the Lifetime movie, I think I got paid like 20 grand.
I think that's somewhat, yeah.
That sounds right. That sounds right.
It's hard to gauge too when like, you know, I think when people hear how much a director makes on a project, you're like, well, that seems like a lot. And then when you like break it down, you're like, mm-hmm. okay, like how many months of work is that? And then like for me, especially, and maybe it's like bad, but I'm like, I always have like money that I'm like mad money that you're like, okay, I'm going to spend this on like crew stuff. Or like if something happens, I'm like, I'll throw money at it.
Sure. And so when you say crew stuff, you mean like a coffee cart or like ice cream on the last day, that sort of stuff you mean?
Yeah, exactly. You know, or yeah, that like always having something. Yeah, yeah. Always having something set aside for that. And then, you know, like especially with indie movies, and this has happened a couple times on projects where, you know, production won't pay for something. So you're like, okay, I'll pay for it. Even though I feel like that's like the no-no, like that happened on Golden Arm. It was like, they wouldn't pay for my third camera on a day. And I was like, I won't take no for an answer. So I'll pay for that camera. You know, so
and I find
I'm probably
like,
not smart.
No, but don't you think like 4 times out of 5, the producer's like, no, we'll find the money somehow. Like, because
yes.
I've had that. I do it a lot less recently. Like the longer I work in this business, the more comfortable I feel being super passionate about a job and at the same time asking to get paid more. Like, mm-hmm. like I've learned to separate those two things from each other and not to feel like me asking to get paid for my time has anything to do with like how much I value the project, you know, yes. creatively.
Yeah.
It took me like there is still 10 years to get over it.
Like, I think if you're asking from like, well, I think Amazon can cough up a third camera's worth of budget. That's mm-hmm. different than like, no, I've been sleeping in an Airbnb with the entire cast and crew for 2 months. And like, I literally know we don't have the money. Is a different deal. And there's a different value proposition, right? Like making that Amazon commercial a little bit better versus making a feature that you have really, really high hopes for and you've invested, you know, months of your life in. It's not totally the same thing. Yeah. I will say, Oren, to your point of like every time I've been like, I'll pay for it myself. I think 100% of the time producers have paid for it out of some other thing. And it feels shitty, actually. Because it feels like it's like, I think I always mean it. I'm always like, no, like this is important to me. Yeah. I'm totally down to go for it. And somehow it feels like I feel like I'm twisting their arm.
Yeah.
In a way that I accidentally breed resentment from them.
Right. The only time I've ever had them actually do it is when I did this commercial and I wanted these hands to come in, you know, from off frame doing mm-hmm. various things. And those hands, it was a SAG commercial. So those hands needed to be SAG, but there was like literally like not one extra cent. We're already like having so much trouble making it work. And I was like, well, I just have my wife do it. She's in SAG. And then whatever her rate is, just subtract it from my rate because it doesn't really matter. It's like all coming to our family anyway. So that's the only time they're like, okay, yeah, we'll just take her rate off of your rate. But otherwise,
that has not happened to me yet. Because I do. Anyway, maybe it's because like it usually is something that I know is like a no. It's going to be a no, and I'm like, I need this. Like, or like I know that it'll make it that much better. I don't know. And the other thing too is like, you know, they put me up at a place, but I'm like, I want to stay at somewhere nicer. So incurring like that cost. And then, you know, on this movie, I had like the DP and the production designer also stay with me because I'm like, we should have powwows. So mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, I'm probably not like the smartest with like my money, but
wait, so you really, so on the prank, you wanted the DP and the production designer with you at like a kind of more comfortable accommodations, and you paid like the difference between what they were going to pay
the Airbnb or whatever.
Yeah. Like I think like whatever they were going to get paid went into it. And then I was like, I want to stay at this Airbnb anyway. So it ended up being like, I had to pay, you know, a little bit more, but to me it was worth it. Cause it was like just being able to like kind of powwow.
The Ojai Valley Inn.
Mm-hmm. I did go there just for fun after the movie was done, but
Good call.
And then there's like a resort amount of money that I pay on every movie.
Sure. Not a bad idea. That's a very nice resort, you guys.
Yeah.
Wait, so was your example of the third camera, is that something that happened on the prank? Like you really wanted a third camera for something?
No, that was for Golden Arm.
Oh. Okay.
I did that on Golden Arm. I just mean like, you know, with every, that's the thing. It's like when you hear how much somebody gets paid on something, you're like, oh, there's, again, I think it goes back to like how long you're part of the project and like how involved it is. It just, when you start to break it down that way, it's like, oh, it always feels less than like how much it sounds.
Yeah. Like, especially if you live in LA, which we do, you know, like if you got paid like $100,000 to direct a movie or something, then you need to, you know, that's like not a lot of money in LA.
No.
Yeah.
Because so then if you have reps, they take a cut.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're probably working for, you know, like a year on a movie, right? So like,
And on this movie, it was interesting because the movie almost conflicted with my episode of Saved by the Bell. Like I literally wrapped mm-hmm. the prank and 3 days later, I started on my episode of Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
And then I did Saved by the Bell and then I went back into post on the prank.
Awesome. That's really nice though, because that gives you like a real palate cleanser. Like you're mm-hmm. not thinking about the movie, like you're just in the fire on a TV show, but it's finite. It's almost like a little mental vacation, even though you're working super hard on both projects.
Yeah. That's super cool thing about TV, which is there's the schedule, the release schedule, right? And so it's like, you can't just like tweak things for months like you can in a feature.
No. And then, you know, directing on a TV show, you're like, I have my edit and then I pass it off and then I'm not a part, you know, with a movie, you're like carrying it all the way to the finish line, you know, at every stage. And so that's why it does feel like, oh, this is almost done. But with a TV show, you're like, I know I'll be done in a week.
So how many days did you shoot on The Prank?
We had 22 days.
Okay. That's pretty good.
That's, that's a healthy indie movie. It's not 15. It's better than 15.
Yes. Two more days and I had on Golden Arm.
And was Rita Moreno working like almost every day?
She worked a lot of the, yeah, she worked, I can't remember exactly how many days, but she was on the majority of the movie. And again, what a dream. Like, I feel like I have to still pinch myself because you're like, she's such an icon and, you know, somebody I've looked up to forever. And just the, you know, so gracious, so present. And I don't know, she's like one of those examples where you're like, she is so grounded and present that you're like, nobody else in this town can have an ego. If she doesn't, like, if she's just like real in there, like nobody else, nobody else has the right to.
And so she's 90 now. I guess she was probably 89 when you shot with her.
Yeah, she's 89. Yeah.
Like, it's still an indie film. You're still having shooting a whole feature in 22 days. And you mentioned there's stunts and there's twists and turns and it's a dark comedy. I'm sure there's fights and things like that. As a director, how do you approach working with someone that, you know, you can't probably just like tie to the top of a car and like run around wild with? Like, tell us a little bit about that. I mean, and I, you know, I'm sure it applies to working with like all sorts of, with kids, with people, you know, people of different abilities. And
well, I think there's the age aspect, but there's also the generational aspect of like, sometimes people who've been around, if you were making movies in like the 70s, 80s, 90s, like life was good, right? So like tightening your belt for an indie can feel daunting sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, people can be a little apprehensive about that.
I mean, what's also crazy, she went from doing West Side Story to then like coming over to this like indie dark comedy. I think one thing that
stories about how Steven does it.
Yeah. You're so much better than Spielberg. He's just such a bossy jerk.
Yeah. No, she did tell, I mean, she had so many stories about like Marlon Brando and like telling us her Elvis stories. So, I mean, I feel like I didn't get to hear as many of those because like I was on set. So I, you know, if I pass by like hair and makeup, I'm like, oh, she's just telling
Yeah, you stories. Just, you just hear like, yeah, like a little tidbit and you're so jealous and everyone else is laughing and she's holding court. Yeah, yeah.
I think what's so cool about her too, and you know, one thing I hope to take away from is like, you're right. Like, she's obviously been in this industry forever on every movie set. But what I was just so refreshing is like, she was excited about every little minutia of making movies. Like, we did this, like, my favorite example was like, we did this scene where she's answering a door and she just opens the door and there's like a little chain link fence. So we wanted to get like a POV. So we put a flag up and it was kind of like emulating the door in the camera. And she was like, I love this like camera trick you're doing. And I'm like, this little flag bit, like, I love that she was like, it's just in awe of this like super simple, like, you know, film school camera trick. And it was like, wow, she is like as excited about movies and making movies as like somebody that just stepped onto a set, which was so fun. And you're like, I hope I never lose that like excitement and like zest for making movies.
Yeah. Well, those old school stars are like so technical, right? Because they have to like know where their light is to hit their marks. They need to, you know, when you grow up on film and every take costs like another $1,000 or whatever, it's like you don't get to shoot for 20 minutes and just edit what you need.
Yeah. You also like, you know, when she was coming up, it was like people were measuring the distance from the lens. And didn't
she
know
was telling us a
it.
Jimmy story about like that. He was like, I forget what movie she said. She said he counted his steps so he knew, like, he had some long walk. And she's like, he counted his steps so that he hit the same, like, mark every time. And we were just like, what? But yeah, I think I feel like working with her was like how I approach like working with most people, right? It's like we talked about the story before we got, you know, we had a few conversations on the phone about her character and, you know, really how I wanted to ground it. And kind of come from that place of like realness. And she was really excited about that. But obviously, like, she's such a comedy icon as well. So it's like, how do we infuse humor into that and keep her, you know, light? And so it was just having a lot of conversations and incorporating a lot of her ideas into the character. When, again, I did my director's pass, it was just incorporating some of the details. And then it was just kind of like we'd get to set, we'd talk about our scenes, you know, what were the limitations maybe that she had or what, you know, and she was always game for anything. Like she, there wasn't any ever time where she was like, no. If sometimes I'd have to be like, I want to, you know, pump the brakes.
I don't think you should jump out that window. Let's throw we have a dummy here that we can just toss and spin. Yeah. I'm curious, do you guys, I mean, you've done like fair amount of long form narrative work recently. Do you ever ask actors like how they like to work on set? Like if they mind you yelling notes from behind the camera out loud, or if they prefer line readings, or, you know, actors are, they're similar, mm-hmm. but they're also very different. Do you ever ask them like just point blank, like what's your method? How do you like to work? I mean, you know, obviously there's like the more methody actors, and then there's the ones that as soon as you yell cut, make a joke.
Yeah. You know what? I don't think I've ever asked. I mean, maybe I should. I feel like I usually start off being like, this is how I like to work. And then that, mm-hmm. that elicits like, oh, I like that. Or like, I prefer this, you know? So not necessarily asking the question, but almost being like, this is how I like. And I feel like I like to not give many notes at the beginning because I like to see what they're bringing. So mm-hmm. I think some actors like that and some actors don't, where they're like, I want you to tell me exactly what you want me to do. And I'm like, we've talked about the character enough that I want to see what your interpretation of that is. And sometimes I think if I give too many notes at top, I don't know where they were starting from, so I can't get back to where they were. Yeah. So sometimes yeah, I like just to be like, let's just see what you have, what your thoughts are, what you're doing. But yeah, I mean, maybe I should.
Well, what I like about what you were saying though, Maureen, is there's something about setting expectations early for actors that I think is really valuable, because sometimes I've made the mistake of not, because I'm the same way. I like to see what they're going to do. I like to keep things loose and then you tighten, right? And mm-hmm. Earlier in my career when I was younger, I feel like I didn't do a good job of communicating that. And so early on, people just didn't realize what my method was and thought that I didn't know what I wanted. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes.
And so if you're just like, no, I just want to see what you're doing. I know what I want, but I don't want to, you're special. You're magical. Do what you do. And then we can maybe meet in the middle a little bit.
I know you're going to give me an amazing performance. So just yeah. do it.
Truly, don't yeah. disappoint us. And there are some actors, and sometimes you're lucky enough to like have a little bit of time with people. Sometimes you're just kind of like, all right, we're meeting on set. We're going to roll. Sometimes the actors don't, the more you touch it, the worse it gets sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, which is, you know, a less nice way of saying what you were saying before, Maureen, of like, you know, having them come at it fresh with their approaches is sometimes your favorite stuff, basically.
And sometimes I think that doesn't leave any room to be surprised, because I might sure. have an idea yeah. in my head that I'm like, I want it specifically this way, which I can always get it that way. But if I mm-hmm. tell them that first, they're never going to give me the thing that I don't know that they can do.
Right. Right.
So
right,
exactly. Yeah. I think right. I've gotten that sometimes from actors being like, do you know, like, just tell me what you want. And it's like, I will, but I want to see first what you're bringing to the table. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I don't want to like put something on it before I even know what it is.
Also, most of the time, most directors haven't gone to more than one acting school. Do you know what I mean? And so maybe you're like really into it and you like jumped into, you've taken improv classes or you went and studied Meisner technique or whatever, but like to be conversant in all of those different schools and all those different languages, I think is pretty uncommon. And so we're learning and picking up little tips and tricks and nuances mm-hmm. of each performer that we're working with. And so jumping in and trying to be like, hey, this is how I want to do it, robs you from that education as well. You know?
Yeah. And they're like, yeah, that's a really good point. They're so much more trained in acting than we are, you know, yeah. in general. But yeah, to me, there's kind of like two parts to a performance. There's like kind of the emotional part, like there's them being the character. And then there's also just the blocking, right? You want them to be yeah. here because our camera is here and it'll look good if they do this, and we'll see the knife they're holding if they lift it to this height, you know? And I like kind of, with actors, part of my method of reminding them that we're like on the same level and we're like kind of colleagues here is to kind of be a little technical and say like, hey, we're going to do a shot. It's going to be like a medium shot here. And when you turn around, like the light's going to hit you here and it'll be really cool. So, you know, I think like yeah. if you're going to react to them, you know, wait till you turn. Like I try to give them things easy things to do physically, and hopefully they can bring the like
the
layer of the character.
Yeah.
Has that ever backfired for you, Warren?
Yeah, like every time.
I didn't mean to set you up that bad.
Yeah, no, it does. It, like, I mean, it's exact. Like, my experience is exactly the same as yours. Some actors, like,
some love it. Some
I find if I had to choose one or the other, I find more actors, especially, you know, I don't work with a lot of actors that have like 80 years of experience in the business. You know, I work with a lot of newer actors and stuff, or even actors that aren't. Like have other jobs other than being actors. And I find that the more you give them, the worst thing is for an actor, just like not know what to do, you know, especially yeah. if it's not, if it's like a small character, like a day player, like a someone that just is saying a punchline or setting something up. And like, obviously it's great when they, as actors, can help you fill out the character outside of
yeah.
what they're doing on camera. Blocking helps give them stuff to do.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm not as good at blocking. I mean, that's what TV directing is helping me maybe better at, is blocking for camera. Mm-hmm. Because I feel mm-hmm. like in the movies that I've done, it is like so much more like character stuff that I'm like, I want to see where they're organically going. And obviously in TV, you don't have time for that. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, I need sure. you to go here. Like, you're yeah, going yeah, to this sure. place.
We're already lit, some actors, so here's your mark. Yeah.
Yeah, are so good mm-hmm. at that. Like I mentioned already during this episode, but my wife is an actor also. And a lot of times in the auditions, we always try to find some business for her. You know, she's auditioning for like the server at the restaurant that is like being interviewed by someone on Law and Order or whatever. Like mm-hmm. she should be like, whatever, checking the cash register, cleaning a table, busing something, whatever. And when she's not doing that, it just feels so fake, you know, even yeah. though in reality, you know, if a police officer came to a restaurant, everyone would stop and just
sure, listen sure. to them. It's like that Mulaney bit.
But, But yeah, but a really experienced actor will come in and they'll be like, oh, maybe I can walk over here. Mm-hmm. There's some actors that are just so good at like living yeah. in the environment instantly. And they're, but a lot of actors, you have to be like, hey, don't just stand there and say the line. You're talking to your husband during breakfast. Like you wouldn't,
sure.
Husband and wife never just stand and look at each other and have a conversation yeah. unless they're talking about a divorce. Even then,
I feel like I do a lot like, how did you feel about that? Right. I feel like I do a lot of like, you know, they do a take and I'm like, well, how'd you guys feel? You know? And then if they're mm-hmm. like, it felt awkward and you're like, yeah, cause I feel like you should be doing something, you know? Right. Or it's like,
when I do that, they're like, how do you feel?
You're like, you tell
I'm
me.
I'm like, oh, that was great. Let's move yeah. on. Sorry for talking to you.
I guess I do. Like, I like that. You know, obviously like, if I like it, I'm going to give mm-hmm. the like, that was great. How did you feel? And they're like, I thought it was great. If I don't like it, I'm like, how did you guys feel about that? And if they're mm-hmm. like, I don't know. That's like my yeah. way of being like, yeah, something is off.
People are like, how much is Maureen squinting when she asks the question? Like, how does she raise her voice at the end?
Yeah. Did I tell this? I'm sure I told this story before, but when I did my Lifetime movie, it starred Lori Loughlin. At the end of like day five or something, she was like, her and the other actress, Jordan Hinson is her name. They came up to me and they're like, we were just like, you know, getting breakfast or whatever. And they're like, so how's it going? Are you like, is everything looking good? Are you happy with everything? I'm like, yeah, of course I'm happy. Just out of curiosity, have you ever had a director tell you they're not happy with something? Like, don't you just know they're happy? And they're like, well, actually, you're the one director that like, we don't quite know if you're happy. And I was like,
so they were like, how are you feeling?
Yeah, basically. I do think I'm pretty good at sensing if like the actor doesn't feel like they nailed it, you know?
Yeah.
Because sometimes I'll be like, oh, that was perfect. And then I'll see the actor like, okay, you sure? And I'll be like, yeah, I liked it. Is there something, do you want to try something different? Like, is there something that didn't work right for you?
Yeah.
And they'll be like, yeah, I keep having to pick up this pan. And like,
I mean, feel like in that case, I'm always like, let's just do one more real quick, everyone. You know,
yeah.
Showing them that you're willing to take another take real fast for them if they feel like they need it, as long as they're not a maniac. We've all
that could get tricky, right? If they're like, if they keep out, like,
yeah, yeah.
I think too, like,
if they're too needy.
Or like, I think that thing about like recognizing if they are struggling, what I try to do too is like, if somebody did a take that I like, but they're like, I might do one more, and then be really specific on what I liked. I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. I loved how you did this thing. So then I think that really shows them like I was paying attention and not just being like, that was great. Let's move on.
Sure. Yeah. I'm thinking about the next setup.
Well, tell us a little bit about how that differs from like when you direct Saved by the Bell and you have these, you know, actors that have done, you know, that are seasoned TV actors. And I'm sure some newer TV actors, and you have a real tight schedule you're trying to hit and a crew that's been working on this show for a long time. How does that compare to, you know, working on like your features in terms of sensing what the actors feel and like whether you want to do another take or feel it out or switch things up versus just like, this is the script. We got to get through these many scenes today and let's just keep moving.
I mean, I think like, I really do think that like TV directing and film directing is so different. And I think you're using different skill sets, right? Like obviously like you're using a lot of the same skill sets and you're working with actors, but I feel like on a TV show, there's so many more people to like check in with than just the actors. So it is kind of, you know, you're a guest on somebody else's set in somebody else's creative sandbox. I feel like somebody else used this analogy, which I think is so great. It's like coming over to someone's party and having to make food in their kitchen. Like you have to use like their ingredients.
In my kitchen and my wife's constant disappointment with it.
Mom, I have some notes.
Does your mom have to use our oven while I'm trying to use our oven? She's got to heat up the frozen lasagna.
Doesn't your mom listen to the show, Warren?
We'll see. We'll find out.
Oh, yeah. Just lay a nugget really like deep in the episode. Yeah.
That's like my wife one time. She like, this is the worst thing. Probably shouldn't say this out loud, but she like put baby powder in the shower when the cleaning people came over. Cause she's like, I feel like they don't clean the showers. So she just put a bunch of baby powder in there. In the shower that we never use, by the way, just to see.
And what was the result?
We never checked, you know? We never used that tire, didn't we? No, I think they cleaned it.
I'm sure they, well, you haven't let them go. It's the same cleaning crew, I imagine. Right?
I will neither confirm nor deny that. But I'm pretty sure they do not listen to the podcast.
Anyway.
Maureen. No, I mean, in Saved by the Bell 2 or any kind of TV show, yeah, you just have that clock and you have to like tell a story in the, like the, you know, a great story with the right visuals in the language of that show, you know, because you're not going to come in and pitch wild shots and stuff like that on a show that already has a visual language set up.
Right.
You know, you might try to stretch, like in my Saved by the Bell episode, I did get a circle dolly shot in, which is like not the language of the show, but I like asked the showrunner about it, you know, set
was
it up.
Was it a drug trip scene?
It was not.
Was it an homage to that 70s show?
No, somebody else was like, is this a 90s music video? I was like,
no. You're like, I've seen that round track and nobody has ever used it for anything.
Yeah. Actually, the DP was he's like, oh, pulling out the dolly track. Yeah. And, you know, we did our backup shots in case that didn't work out or creatively didn't work in the show, but it made it in the episode. Ooh, so I feel like I think you're trying to, again, my TV mentor director Todd Holland always says you're trying to emulate and elevate. So I feel like that is definitely, I think, like, you know, thinking when you're directing on a TV show, you're like, I'm trying to work within the language of the show, kind of like bump up the extra things, be there for the actors that, yeah, they know their characters better than you do, but like, how can you help facilitate like them finding something different or really knowing the emotional thread of that episode so you can help them pull that through?
You know, Maureen, you're helping me realize that I feel like there's an element of accountability to different stakeholders that is similar between television and commercials that you don't totally have in features, right? In features, there's a little bit of like, you have to answer to yourself. Like, it's kind of like there's producers and investors and the like, but like, if the Golden Arm was bad, it would be a way bigger problem for you in a certain sense than if an episode of Saved by the Bell was bad, because there are a lot of people who know how to keep it from being so off the rails that it wouldn't be usable. Do you know what I mean? You can save the bell will save you. Yeah. But the DP's shot a bunch of episodes. The cast all knows their characters, showrunners that, you know, there's a lot of different people there. Yeah.
The big other creative force behind TV is the writers, right? Like in a movie, you're not, you know, I'm not checking with the writers. I'm going off my vision and the vision that I'm bringing forward. And then on a TV show, you're making sure that the writer's vision, and you're checking in with them. And I had such great, you know, I worked with such incredible writers on Saved by the Bell. And my episode in particular was written by Victoria Gonzalez and Marcos Gonzalez. And it was a Spanish kind of language episode. So I don't speak Spanish. And, you know, it was their story to tell. So it was like working really intricately with them. And that's like kind of a fun, you know, it's a different creative team than it is on a movie. You might have the writer there, but you're not like doing rewrites or punch ups like you would on a TV show, or making sure that they're hitting the jokes the way the writer had intended it for that episode of television. Right. And, you know, Tracy Wigfield is the showrunner of Saved by the Bell, and she's just such a genius. And so, you know, you have your meetings with her before you're doing the episode, making sure that it's all in line with her vision. There's so much more checking in and making sure what you're doing is in line. And on movies, you're just doing that in a different way. I haven't worked on a big studio movie, so I'm sure there's probably much more like hands in that on that, you know, clay.
Sure. That's an important delineation. You're right. Yeah.
And in indie movies, it is just like they've hired you because of your vision and because of like, you know, what you bring to the table. And I think there is more, you just have more autonomy. And I think you're doing most of that work at the front end during prep, you know, if you've done all your write work.
Yeah, but a feature, even like if it's not part of a franchise, to me, the obvious difference between features and TV is like TV, you're not establishing a tone, you know, unless you're doing like a one-off episode that's like the Bizarro Community episode
or something.
Yeah, or the pilot. But in a feature, even if it's a studio feature, if it's not part of a franchise, you are figuring out like
you know, the creative force
what the movie
it.
Is, and yeah, and you might end up reshooting the whole third act, like in World War Z or something, you know, because it's not working, which you would probably not do in TV. But kind of on that note, I want to just pivot back to features real quick. I know I have to wrap this up soon, but I'm curious, you're mostly known for your comedy work, like in The Prank and Golden Arm and kind of your those movies where a tone hasn't been established. How do you know if a scene is working comedically? And do you have any kind of strategies or things you do if there's a scene that's just like not as funny as you thought it should be? I guess I'm curious about your comedy directing and if it at all is different than your drama directing.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it is different because I feel like with comedy, I think it is that thing about like knowing what I want or like knowing what I want it to be, but then also covering my butt where you're like, obviously you're going to get it scripted and you're like, if you feel like it's not working, then I just like to be like, let's just like throw away the script. Let's just throw away everything that we're doing and then try something else. And if we find something that works, then we can like hone that. And so, I mean, obviously you can't do that in TV because, and you wouldn't because you have the writers there to like structure it and you don't have time. But in movies in particular, it is just like, I guess it's that like, how are we feeling about this? If we're feeling like it's not working, you know, we wildly have to change something, whether it's the blocking or, you know, the way they're saying it isn't coming out right. I'm like, okay, well then don't say it that way. Don't say those words.
And at this point, you probably have pretty good instincts about like if something is funny, right? Like you're not, like I feel like on the student film, it's like, wait, is that funny? Does that work? Like you kind of look around and you're like, are people laughing, not laughing? And you still haven't learned that like people laughing on set actually has like nothing to do with like whether the edit is funny or not.
Yeah.
But by now you probably have like really good instincts where you're like, I feel like this isn't as funny as it was on the page. And like, what can we do?
I think it's definitely like making usually going not. I mean, it's hard to be like funnier, but it's also like letting a scene play out longer because you might find a natural button or, you know, even with people that don't improvise, you know, it's just like giving them a different direction, right? Where it's like, now you're sad or you're upset, you know, or be more physical. And I think like, I guess to me, what's interesting about comedies is like, I don't like most comedies. Like, you know, I don't like features. I think like a lot of movies are just too zany for me. So I think sometimes when things aren't working, I'm like, it doesn't feel real because I think you're, you know, whatever, there's truth in comedy, right? So I feel like the more like we can get to it being like a natural real reaction or how do you really feel? Like one, it'll just ground it. So if it's not funny, at least it's authentic.
Right.
And then usually from there, there's something funny that happens or the actor has an idea or like they want to try something. So I think it's like just going back to like your base. Like if this isn't working comedically, that means something is not authentic in this moment.
I think that's right. And I think that another way of looking at it is like so often people are trying to be funny. And as a result, it feels awkward or sweaty or something. And
forced.
So forced. Right. Yeah. And so I think just stepping back and being like, okay, well, like, well, how would someone actually react to this insane thing that's happening? What's the one strange thing that's happening in this scene? What's the driving force that makes it quote unquote funny? And are we reacting authentically to that? Or are we playing off of that in a way that just an actor or maybe even a writer or a director is trying to like push something instead mm-hmm. of being grounded in that way? You know, like I'm almost always like, oh no, you would be like upset by this or confused by it or like checking in with other people. It's almost always reaction based that kind of helps ground things. And then you have permission to go crazy again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Then the crazy thing gets crazier, you know?
I think with the prank too, we had to actually pull back on the comedy sometimes because I think it was remembering like who's supposed to be the, like, where's the butt of the joke, right? Like one of the, mm-hmm. one of the caveats was like, Rita's so funny. So she does so many funny things, but sometimes it's like, is she the butt of this? Like, why is this mm-hmm. funny? Is it because she's the butt of the joke? It's like, oh no, she, so sometimes mm-hmm. it's just making sure that you're like, okay, where is the comedy coming from? Because then it'll take you out of like the reality of the movie, you know?
Yeah. I think that speaks to Oren's point of like, people laughing on set. Like, I'm sure the thing that you cut was authentically funny and I bet it killed on set in that moment. But like, where does the power dynamic lie? I think it's an interesting North Star. That's smart.
Right. And like random things are funny on set. If an actor accidentally knocked something over and it fell down, mm-hmm. it would be hilarious. But if you ever put that take in the movie, it's like, what does this have to do with anything? You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think also in the edit, I'm all like always fighting. I mean, that's like, I think always like a funny thing when you're like fighting with the editor, like, no, this is funnier. And it's like, mm-hmm. why is this funny? I feel like my editor, Sarah, I think we would fight a lot about, because sometimes we have different sense of humor. It's like, no, right. this is funnier. And she's like, I think it's funny this way. And mm-hmm. so you're like, no.
Do you feel like you have, you know, quirks or tendencies? Like, I feel like I'm always, I love like
always a, like add a fart sound. Matt's like, don't worry, we'll just add a fart sound.
Just add a fart sound. No, but I do like a writerly joke, like something that's a little too literate sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, something like something punny or something playful or something constructed in a unique way. And I'm always tickled by that, but that's not always funny. Ha ha.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have sweet spots or soft spots or anything like that?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I guess to me, though, like I always gravitate to things that just feel organically funny. Mm-hmm. So maybe those are the less like written jokes, you know, mm-hmm. in a movie that it's like comes from more of the situation or, you know, obviously I actually, you know what? I think reactions are the funniest. It's usually like when I'm in an edit, something that tickles me is like somebody's reaction. It's not even the joke. It's just someone's like reaction to something.
100%. I think that reactions are like the new like laugh track. Like that's when an audience realizes that something is funny because the reaction is the thing that cues them in to like, oh, this is discordant with the reality mm-hmm. of this piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it can also go off the rails. If you have too many reactions, then it's like now you're just telling
you. You're telegraphing.
Yeah. As a person who, you know, spent a couple of years making a lot of prank videos.
Oh, the name of my movie.
Oh, sure. I guess that's true. Huh? What?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went to the seminar many years ago at Judith Weston's studio. You know her? She wrote directing actors and it was this like sitcom director and he just had this, like, he talked to us about how to block actors for like a sitcom. You know, he's like, you have five people in a scene. You need a wide shot of five people all talking to each other. How do you stand them in a mm-hmm. way that doesn't look like a marching band, you know? So he talked a lot about that and he's like, and then the A camera can get this over, the B camera can get this. But another thing he had is he did comedy sitcoms. Is that he would read a script and he had this like a bag of tricks. He's like, okay, there's the double take, you know, like someone looks mm-hmm. at something twice and that automatically gets a laugh. There's the like, you know, the surprised face. Like there's the like someone being bored by something, you know, like, mm-hmm. and he literally like had like a whiteboard and he wrote like, here's the six funny things. He's like, as a director, there isn't a ton you can add to like a sitcom comedy script. He's like, so these are my tools. Like, and it's basically just like, how are these characters reacting and what are some physicality things that I can add to just like make a moment just a little bit funny.
I wish he had like a six-sided die that he would just roll. Like double take.
Yeah.
Try a shrug on this one.
I do love a double take. I do find that nowadays they're not, you know, it's you need a really good actor to like sell.
I was going to say, it's like all in the delivery.
Yeah.
It's like the spit take too. Like, yeah, somebody can just do it so naturally. And then some people.
Sure. Have either of you ever done an actual spit take? Have you ever actually spit something out in reaction to something?
I have
as well. I was driving.
I think it's coming out my nose.
Yes. No, milk. No. Milk, yeah. Through the nose move.
Yeah.
I thought you asked if I'd actually shot one.
No. I think it's helpful to have experienced a spit take.
Oh, yeah. You can't shoot a spit take without having experienced
it. Having done it, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask an actor to do something I've never put myself through.
You know, you don't see milk coming out of noses enough anymore.
Well, you know that when I grew up, kids drank milk. That was like,
yeah, kids don't drink milk anymore. Is that
what they don't
know? They drink like a little milk as babies, and then you pretty much switch them to water at like a year old. So, how can we see this movie, The Prank? What's next for it? I mean, I know you still have a Day of Color,
Yeah, we're finishing up Color. We've submitted to some festivals, and yeah, they're gonna take it out for distribution. So hopefully in the next year it'll be available. But yeah,
very, cool.
Very, very exciting.
With the magic eight ball, we'll say.
What's next for you? Anything on the docket? Right, and you mentioned there's some things you can't talk about. Anything you can talk about?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, just kind of some things in the fire. I was like, irons in the fire. Yeah. I was like, those things in the fire.
Anvils in the water.
I've been writing, I mean, the past 2 years, actually, a horror comedy I've been writing with Mary Holland and Betsy Sodaro. So
I'm
very excited about trying to take that out. And we have Merman attached right now to produce. So that's really cool. And then, yeah, just thinking about some TV shows and just trying to write my own stuff. Hopefully, you know, working on getting a studio movie this year. So just wanted to keep making cool shit.
And are you spending more of your, like, if you had tomorrow off and you can do whatever you want with it, work, but you wanted to work, would you focus more on TV stuff, like any more TV opportunities or more feature stuff? Like, is there something that you are pushing more towards?
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to, you know, there's a couple movies that I wanted to kind of be finished, you know, either starting or finishing. And I think I haven't really gotten to tell, like, my personal story. So that's something that, like, I've been kind of kicking around as a story about growing up with my like Irish Catholic grandmother and my Indian Pakistani Muslim grandmother and kind of like the experience of both of their deaths, but maybe in like a comedy.
I thought it was going to be cupcake related.
But I feel like it's a story that I'm like, I really want to tell, but I don't know the structure of it yet. So I feel like if I had a day to be like, you have to work on something, it would be like trying to do that. And then, yeah, just kind of giving back because I've been doing a lot of stuff with a lot of the kind of helping lift people up and bring others into the fold, because I think that's one thing during the pandemic that has been so great for me is just like going back to community and talking with directors. And in a weird way, I've been connecting more with people that I never would have connected with if we had not had a pandemic.
Right. Like the people that are giving you your vaccine shot. You're like, so you should direct.
What do you want to be doing? Yeah.
You're really making me miss our live shows.
Yeah. Our lives where we used to leave our houses.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's where it grew from is just like that, I mean, that's what's so cool is like just being able to like sit and talk about craft or like what you're going through or just like, oh my gosh, this thing happened on set or in color or in post. And, it just makes you feel less lonely and that we're all going through the same stuff. And I do feel like, you know, I've been focusing a lot on women's groups, but I have a lot of guy friend directors and they're going through the same stuff too. And so, you know, whether it's like not finding work or feeling like I'm not the kind of directors you're looking for. I feel like everybody has that same feeling.
Yeah. I miss the days of like getting together with my director friends. We'd all sit in our director chairs, like wear berets and just like yell action at each other. And like,
yeah, smoke cigarettes out of a chevret, I think it's called, the long stick.
Matt, what year were you hanging out with directors? We never did
it. Sorry, it's just, if I'm going to wear a beret, I'm smoking out of a chevret.
Except Matt just has like a baseball cap and like a hoodie. And we're like, ugh, sketch comedy guy.
Yeah. Cool. Nice, scruffy beard, bro.
Well, that's awesome. Maureen, congrats on all the things. We're excited for your movie and for all the other things you have coming up. Yeah.
So fun to catch up.
We hope you can come back on soon. And are you cool with just hanging out with us for two more minutes to give an unpaid endorsement?
Yeah.
Unpaid endorsements. I'm going to talk about two things real quick. The first one is cream cheese. So first of all, there was a cream cheese shortage. I don't know if you guys know this, but I managed to find some cream cheese right around Christmas. It was at the height of the cream cheese shortage. And, you know, if you make cheesecake, it's made out of cream cheese. And it was a big problem in our house. But now that cream cheese is kind of back, there's this thing that's been on my mind for many years. And I've never talked about it out loud. But like, I don't understand why you would not buy whipped cream cheese. Do you guys eat cream cheese? Do you guys eat bagels?
I do eat cream cheese. It goes bad a lot faster, and you can, you know, whip your own cream cheese.
The whole idea of eating a bagel is like you're popping something in the oven real quick.
I'm just saying.
The toaster, it's toasted. Then you put cream cheese on it. You put some everything but the bagel sprinkles on it, maybe some cucumbers, and you eat it as you're running out the door.
You mean you cut it into thirds?
I'm not even going to bring that up because I know it really irks you and Carlin for some reason. But my new thing is the whipped cream cheese, put a butter knife in it. It spreads so easily.
It's aerated. It's just cream cheese with more air in it.
Yeah. So maybe you're getting a little less cheese for the buck or whatever. But
No, it goes bad a lot faster.
How long do you keep cream cheese for? 7 months? Like I go through a tub of cream cheese in like 2 weeks.
I actually like the brick, the old school brick.
No, come on. Yeah, the Philadelphia thing where you have to like get your fingers all dirty trying to take
if you want it to be a little
metal
creamier, you throw that into
food processor?
Stand mixer, bro.
Come on. Whipped cream cheese, get some. It will literally save you probably 2 to 3 hours of your life. Over the next, you know,
it'll shorten your life by 2 to 3 hours is what you're saying.
It will extend your life because you won't be spending it trying to put your knife in hard cream cheese and trying to mash it against the soggy bagel. Anyhow, whipped cream cheese. My other thing
is cream cheese is very good. I'm just saying you can make it yourself.
Is that enough? Maybe I don't even need another thing.
There's maybe some room for improvement. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you, so for my wife for Christmas, I never, ever know what to buy her. But for some reason, I was just hanging out with a bunch of people. I was working on some shoots end of last year, and then I had some plumbing issue at my house, and I was talking to the plumber a lot. Do you know what a Theragun is?
No.
Yeah.
It's like if you, I guess.
Oh, is it the muscle thing? The muscle thing?
Yeah. It's like a vibrating gun thing that it's like a massager. And everyone is saying how amazing these things are. They're kind of developed for athletes, but even if just your back hurts or like...
Also, it's worth it to mention that your wife is a health instructor. She teaches Pilates. So she works out pretty regularly.
Yeah. But I only buy her things that I might want to use as well.
I mean, that's a good strategy.
So everyone was like, the Theragun is just amazing. It's just like, it's good for your muscles. But also, again, just like, you know, if you're just feeling out of shape or whatever. It's just, it's this awesome thing, except it's like $8 million. But if you just type in like best Theragun knockoff, wire cutter comes up and like, you can get like a really amazing equivalent, $100 on Amazon.
Less of a brand. I'm sure there's a pretty significant markup on Theraguns, but it is funny that you're endorsing getting your wife the knockoff for Christmas.
Oh, come on. It's still $100. What am I going to spend $900 on this massage thing she might not want?
I had no idea. Are Theraguns really that expensive?
Wait, how much are they?
They range. I mean, the kind of base standard one is like $600.
No, really?
Damn.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize
they
that.
They can go way higher and you can get kind of, it's just like a Dyson. It's like the Dyson of percussion massage guns.
Percussion.
Also, I tried it out on my baby and it's really funny.
Do that.
I got the Sonic handheld percussion massage gun on Amazon. It's got like a bazillion 5-star ratings. So
okay, cool.
If you want to,
that's pretty good, Orin.
Treat yourself.
That's a good one.
That sounds good.
Okay, Maureen, what you got?
Mm-hmm. I really just like. I feel like I'm addicted, and I have to stop, but I won't. Is Kofax coffee on Fairfax?
Maureen, can we talk about that breakfast burrito and also? It's on many, many lists as like what top 10 best breakfast burritos in Los Angeles. And
it's
also
so good.
The passion fruit donut.
I've never had that.
Oh, Maureen.
Do you think it would be irresponsible on a work day to drive all the way from Silver Lake to
There's Fairfax? One. There's also one in Burbank.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, there's that's one. Exciting.
So I'm there every day. And they also have really good sugar cookies that are like in-house made that are so good.
Ooh, and they have an impossible breakfast sandwich. It's only $12 for a breakfast sandwich.
Worth it.
So I'm addicted to Kofax coffee. And again, I like it iced. I like it hot. They do like a really good golden milk there as well. They have a lot of options. Golden milk? Golden milk is like, because I was going to maybe go off coffee and like dairy. So it's like an almond milk with like turmeric and no caffeine. And it's also really good and tasty.
Why would you go off coffee? Do you not like yourself?
I know. I think I'm just so addicted to it. I'm cold turkey. I'm like all or nothing. So
how many cups do you drink a day?
I'm just going to drink coffee forever.
Probably like two, which is not that bad, but it is just like.
If you don't like have them, it's like the end of the world.
Yeah.
That's how I am.
Yeah, same. Well, I love that endorsement. So my unpaid endorsement, I think we talked about it on the show, but do you guys listen to The Business, the NPR Hollywood podcast?
No.
Yeah, Kim Masters.
Kim Masters. It's great. It's really, you know how people kind of go through like fits and starts with podcasts? Well, you'll be like, oh, you find a new one or whatever, and you forget about your favorites. The Business has been kind of on a hot streak, I feel like, of just being really in tune with what's going on with the streaming wars. Just kind of like, it's that wonderful mixture of like Kim Masters has been around for so long that she's got this.
I mean, there's no one that knows more about what's happening in Hollywood able to talk about it succinctly and clearly better than Kim Masters.
Yeah. So if you're ever like on social media and you're like, what are people complaining about? Well, like who said what, you know, and it all feels like inside baseball, there's always a good episode about it that just kind of clarifies it. She's got that old school sort of mentality where she like, you know, loves old Hollywood in a way that I relate to. And I kind of, there are lots of things that about old Hollywood that are, it's good that it's dead and gone, but there is like a romance to a certain aspect of the way things used to be that was really fun. I feel like, you know, she hints at like.
She talks about executives at studios all the time. Yeah. Everyone knows that John Burger King is taking down the animation department at DreamWorks now.
Yeah. Jason Kilar or whatever is on his way out from HBO Max. Yeah, weekly podcast. Okay. Yeah,
it's on NPR. So. It's on.
I know my favorite as well. My favorite is Throughline, but I'm like, I will add that too. Throughline is my absolute favorite podcast.
What's Throughline?
Throughline is an NPR a podcast by NPR, and it's what's so great about it. I feel like the way they say it is good. It's like they take something from our past that like, or it's like how it is in our present, and then they go back and study it, and they show the through line through where we are to today. It's such a great podcast for like. History, but they do it in a creative way with like musical elements and sound design, and like they really immerse you. And they always pick topics too that like aren't covered as much as like they did one about the electrical grid a couple weeks ago.
Did they do one about Trump? Like no one talks about that guy.
Yeah, I need to hear more about that history.
Yeah.
But I'm going to add this one today to my list.
That the filibuster wasn't as like a relatively new thing.
Yeah, sure. Mr. Smith, he went to Washington. And filibustered, right?
Yeah. That movie's like 100 years old, right?
Yeah. It is pretty old, actually. Yeah, yeah. Maureen, this has been great. Where can listeners learn more about you, keep track of what's going on, keep track of when the prank is coming to screens near them?
I'm a big Instagram person, so just Maureen Barucha, Instagram.
Yeah, just easily. Maureen Barucha. Everyone knows how to spell that.
Maureen Barucha.
I think it's just the H in the Barucha that...
That's the curveball.
That's the curveball, yeah. That's the twist and turn we don't see, just like the prank.
Hey, full of surprises.
There you go.
Well, if you want to read about what we talked about, see our unpaid endorsements, they should be on our website, just shootitpod.com. Or not, who knows?
If you want to be the person who puts them on the website, drop us a line at justshootitpod@gmail.com, or if you have any questions. But we are actually looking for a producer/editor. We woefully miss our dear friend Sarah. But if you're interested in joining the team, let us know. justshootitpod@gmail.com. And you can follow us across all social media at justshootitpod and me at Mr. Matt Enloe.
And I am at O Kaplan on Instagram. I'm at Smitey Pileg on Twitter. And the music you're listening to right now is from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. And we will catch you next time. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.